Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, Sports City. We are back. Let's go.
Woo! 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 I am back, niggas. Out there for their purchase. We surely appreciate it. But you about to witness is my thoughts.
Just my thoughts, man.
Right or wrong. Just what I was feeling at the time. You ever felt like this?
Okay, man. The caller number is 929-477-2759. We got you guys locked and loaded for the next 90 minutes in this kitchen. You guys could have been anywhere else in the world. But you are here with the chefs, and boy, oh boy, stuff went down yesterday. We got some more stuff to get into as the things commence today. But before I kick anything off, I got my co-host with me, my brother out there on the west side. I don't know if I call him Mac-10. I don't call him Dub C. But it's R. Keezy in the building. Welcome to the brunch. How are you feeling this morning? I don't know. Keezy, are you still there? Royce, do I have you online? We may be experiencing some technical difficulty, people. I'm not sure. Royce, can you hear me? Okay. Royce, can you hear me?
Can you hear me?
There we go. I got you. There you go.
Yeah, what happened is my phone, I got a call coming in from a homie in Texas. I ain't talked to him in a minute. I guess he just figured this was a good time to hit me. He don't know what's going on. I'm going to have to holler back. One of my old military buddies, he was actually served this country in Desert Shield, Desert Storm together. I'll hit him back after the show. Let's go, Sports City.
Okay, and like I said, man, a lot of things, well, not a lot, but some very interesting situations went down, and I'm going to keep it personal here, Sports City. One of the games that went down, as of this past Saturday, was a family affair, my brother being a diehard Niner fan and my mama being a diehard Vikings fan. So it was going down, trash talk going all over the place, but only one could prevail. But just to save some of that, you know, that's on the back burner. I do want to keep that cool, man. And, of course, I'm a little frustrated on how things went down last night. And not just the expectancy of going out there to try to win a game, but while this team was hobbled, my Thunderboys came up short. But I'll dig into a lot of that right now to give us some leeway before we jump into a lot of the games and things of that nature for today and the things that went down yesterday as well. So, first and foremost, we're going to give some of this NBA action a little lift here, put it on the table. The Rockets get their swagger back, if you will. They go back home and winning their game up against the Timberwolves 139-109, in which James Harden was close to a triple-double. He went to triple-double by 2 assists, 32-12, and 8 assists on this night. And the notable player for the Wolves was Josh Okogie. But here goes the crazy part. The Wolves lose by 30 on the road. And we were just talking about this, if I'm not mistaken, where the Timberwolves can try and pick themselves back up and get back into the hunt. Even if they got back into the hunt in the Western Conference, I don't even think that they would last long. I don't even think that this would be a 6-game. I think they would lose in like 5. I don't really want to paint a sweep on them. I really don't. But it's not there right now, and something has to give, whether it is Saunders and him being a young coach or things of that nature. But your thoughts on this game last night, and I more or less want to say how things pan out throughout the season for this Wolves team while they're sitting 8 games under 500.
Well, Thomas, you know what the issue truly is in Minnesota. It just comes down to health. I mean, how good can you really be without your all-star potentially all NBA center and Karl-Anthony Towns? I mean, you're talking about a chunk of offense you know, about 25 points, 13 rebounds, handful of assists, steal, a couple blocks. I mean, just playing through him, his lack of presence. I think he's up to about 13 games missed now and counting. Wiggins is back. However, you know, he's now back playing the small forward. I don't see him handling the ball as much. They were all in on the, I guess you could say, point Wiggins type of, you know, creation. Had him handling the balls a ton, creating the offense. It's like now they're actually experimenting with Jared Culver in the same type of role and function. So, unfortunately, Thomas, it's just difficult NBA basketball to watch with some of these teams. And, you know, this is one of them right now. And taking on, you know, James Harden and Russell Westbrook at a time where there's been, you know, they just came off the celebration of Russ in OKC. This really wasn't much of anything. This was like a speed bump for the Rockets. I mean, they ran right through them, beat them by 30 points. And it wasn't much of a fight put up by the Minnesota Timberwolves. It was as if they were all just going through the motions, and it's really hard to watch as a fan. It's just one of those games, it's like you peeked in on it, and then you had to kind of move away from it just because. All Rockets, nothing else to see here.
Right, definitely, and that's how I feel. But this is the one thing about the situation that you just addressed, knowing that Cat wasn't on the floor, right? What if the Wolves go into these games and Cat gets into foul trouble, you know, and they're going to have to survive without him? Like, they're going to have – somebody's going to have to step up. And not to say, like, this will be an all-game thing because he didn't play, but you got to think of these other players that have to step up. And Deang is one of those players that I, you know, try to peg as one of the potential players that could add more, but he doesn't have the capacity to put points up on the board like Cat could or be an impact on the glass like Cat could. So it's like these guys are – trying not to drown in the wild waters of the Wild West, if you will. So, in looking at the averages of the scores, right, each quarter, outside of the first quarter in which the Rockets won, right, every quarter the Rockets played, they scored over 35 points each quarter, 35 in the second, 45 in the third. They damn near scored 50 and scored 37 to close the game out. And let alone, you know, that's garbage time a lot of the times in the fourth quarter. They made sure they put their thumb on the Timberwolves and said, don't move, everybody be still. Okay, so I'm going to get away from that one. Another blowout, if you will, if I'm saying that correctly, which I feel this is, I'm saying this correctly. I don't care how people look at this. The Pelicans, who have actually been playing interesting enough, and I know we've been talking about them as of late with Brandon Ingram and the impact that he's had on this team, and even though they're in the Western Conference, they're making noise, but they are not in the top half of the conference as of yet. They go into the Beantown, a.k.a. Boston, and lose by 35. Everybody's losing by 30, but this was a blowout Saturday. And Jason Tatum hit his career high. Jason Tatum went off for 41 up against this Pelicans team where they had bodies to throw at him. You had Lonzo Ball, you had Brandon Ingram. You had people to stay in front of him, but they just couldn't. He was comfortable on a night like this. Your thoughts with the Celtics pulling this one off of against the Pelicans and still waiting for Zion's arrival, if it will be this coming week or next week as well?
Well, Thomas, you hit it on the head once again, man. I don't know if this is going to be a trend, but blowout Saturday is absolutely what we saw around the NBA. And this game was no different. Look, Brandon Ingram put up only 16. He's averaging almost 25, 26, last I checked. And, you know, good performance, I guess, statistically in terms of, you know, points from, you know, Jackson Hayes. But only 2 rebounds from your rookie starting center in the absence of Derek Favors. Hey, that's not the answer, and especially for those fantasy freaks out there who rushed to the waiver wire to grab this guy. Hey, thanks for the 2 blocks and the 20 points, but the 2 rebounds? Wow, that's not enough. Lonzo Ball, 13 rebounds. You would have thought he was the starting center on the team there in New Orleans. They got handled. Boston just outperformed them, outclassed them in terms of talent, knowing what they wanted to do. There at home,
Kanter, a whopping 19 rebounds. Kemba Walker, just a pedestrian, 17, 5, and 7 there. But Jason Tatum was the man. And so I don't know if that was an issue of Brandon Ingram or Jason Hart. I didn't see a lot of that game of who was guarding who. But let's be clear, Brandon Ingram's strength of his game, from what I have observed, is definitely not his defense. So, and it just turned into be one of those nights where he got out-dueled on the offensive side of the ball. All Tatum, all Celtics, dare I say, all the time. Only Brandon Ingram and his running mates could change that.
Right. And the one thing that I feel bad about this is, like, this Pelican team is starting to, like, build themselves up to be a stronger team throughout the season. You're starting to get stronger play out of Lonzo Ball. Lonzo Ball was an assist short of a triple-double. I think they are waiting for Zion so they can start to build that cohesiveness and see how they can attack the rest of the season if they can make an incredible run, because they're 12 games under 500. I don't think that they will be a playoff team just because of the way that they had to start the season without one of their notable players. And just like I said, I wasn't looking at Brandon Ingram as being a defensive stopper. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying just to put bodies in front of him, knowing his length to probably contest a shot. You know what I'm saying? But Tatum was happy playing against a Pelican team who have, you know, I want to say a chink in their armor or you know, a weak wing, if you will. So, and no pun intended on saying that because it's the Pelicans. But, hey, they did what they needed to do, and this was an all-out effort for them to go into this, well, go back home and win this game and put up a buck 40 as well, just like the Rockets. Everybody, damn, they're putting up 140 points in these games. So, and the one thing that I am questioning all across the board, I'm saying this to all of you in the NBA, where's the defense? Where is the defense? Majority of these games are over 200. Like, and not to just start talking, you know, sport book talk and Vegas talk, but I can throw it in here nowadays, but everything is over 200 points.
It's all good. You got to do it now.
Right. So it's fair game now. But everything over 200 points. If you see an over-under that's under 200, it's more than likely it's going to go over, but it could be one of those games where everybody's missing. But come on, everybody across the board is basically putting up 200 or better. Like it's fair game at the end of the day. Okay. So let me get away from this one. The next game I have is the Chicago Bulls. They win their game in Detroit up against the Pistons, 108-99, in which Zach LaVine went off for 25 points. I really feel bad, Detroit, and I don't mean to just butcher you guys, but I kind of have to. Andre Drummond got ejected in this game, and he threw the ball at somebody and got ejected. And I don't like to see Derrick Rose in this situation. Derrick Rose continues to go out there every night. It is play his type of basketball. I don't want to just say he gives it all, even though he does. At least that's how I feel. I feel like he gives it his all, but I don't want to use that. I just want to say Derrick Rose goes out there, and every night he's consistently the high scorer, and he's coming off the bench. Listen, I can't lie, and I'm going to keep it 100% real with you. I'm not a Bulls fan. I'm not a Pistons fan. I am a Derrick Rose fan because the way that I grew up, or the kid that I grew up with since I was like 9, 10 years old, they play exactly alike. Every time he was a point guard, shooting guard, like they called him a combo guard. And every time he got the ball, if he went into the lane and he was mad, he played like Derrick Rose. And it's like he reminded me of my friend KD. And this is before Kevin Durant, because I'm older. So it's like watching Derrick Rose play the same way, go attack the rim or attack your big man and knowing he's a guard. And now he's built up his jump shot to knock down a three ball with consistency. It's like, I don't want to watch him. I don't want to say wash away because I don't think he's washed up, not at all. But, like, watching his talent go unnoticed or, you know, a lot of people aren't giving – I don't want to say people aren't giving him credit. But, like, I feel like he should be getting a better hand than what he's getting in Detroit. An interesting amount of names are here in the Pistons team, and they can't win games like they are losing. While the Bulls were on a losing streak at that, and this game at home in Detroit, and they still lost this game. What's your thoughts on this matter? I don't know if you want to peg on the Derrick Rose situation. Zach LaVine, like I said, went off for 25. They also got a good play from Lauri Markkanen as well. But your thoughts on this game, and if you do want to peg on Andre Drummond as well, like I said, he got ejected by throwing the ball at Gafford also.
Yeah, yeah. The little scrum that he and Gaffer got into is just immaturity, in my opinion. At the same time, I'm sure he's pretty frustrated with the overall conversation surrounding his name being in the trade winds, all the losing. And at that point, you got to realize you got 19 minutes of play in, and you only have 9 points and 4 rebounds, 2 assists, 1 steal, 0 blocks. Like, congrats, you took a 3 and made a 3. I didn't see that, so I don't know if that was actually by design offense or in the quarter type of situation. But Andre Drummond is he's on the block, in my opinion, man. Not just, you know, the chopping block as far as trading, but he's fighting for his career. Like, he's got to modify his game. He's got to prove that he can be one of those bigs that remain relevant today. Yes, he's got it. I mean, with his size and strength, he's got to, whether he likes the Joel Embiid or not, he's got to try to take a page out of the Joel Embiid book, right? He's got to rebound at a high level. He's got to dominate in the paint, and he's got to be able to knock down the three ball at a consistent basis and maybe make some moves, you know, from that elbow attacking the rim. And B loves to, you know, sometimes drive right, spin back left or whatever, shoot the little fadeaway over the shoulder, those types of things. But Derrick Rose is the story, the positive feel-good story in Detroit. Even though they're not stringing together a lot of wins, he is doing his best at this point, doing all that his body will allow him to do in terms of stringing together, you know, consistent games. Can he win Sixth Man of the Year? If the fans, if the writers want to just give it to him, but he's not really in the running even for Sixth Man of the Year because they're not, his performances just aren't impacting winning on a consistent basis. This team is not really well constructed. I don't know who's in charge, and it's not just with Detroit, but unfortunately, Timeless, I gotta be honest here, man. I gotta alert all fans of the NBA to be very patient. This league is an obvious transition, not just on the court, but has to be a transition in the front offices, in management, hell, maybe even in human resources. Like, how do they determine who's truly a basketball mind and not just a software guru, a algorithm writer, and things of that nature? Because I'm not seeing quality basketball right now. And as a fan and someone who's been watching this league for over 40 years, this has been the most difficult, you know, watch in seasons. And I'm talking about through and through from top to bottom, not just, you know, the teams that we're, you know, we're penciling into postseason play and the NBA finals and the conversation pieces. I'm just talking about everybody top to bottom. And these games are difficult to watch like this. And so for the Chicago Bulls, Timeless, look, they got a little bit of something, but they're very young. And, you know, where are the fundamentals? Mom, dad, grassroots basketball, as an official at that level, man, I see this big, big picture, and it's hard sometimes. And I hate to feel like, you know, I got to come on Sports City, take the question you throw to me, and attempt to answer it in the fashion that is really, you know, just my view. Like, I'm seeing everything, and this is just ridiculous. We got to get the fundamentals back. We got to, you know, if they're going to run plays, like, run them. You got to want to be out there, and it's got to mean more than just your brand. And, you know, cats are making business decisions on the defensive side of a basketball. Like, slide your feet. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Get a deflection, you know, understand where you're going to probably get a steal and where you're going to get a block. Play position defense. Communicate. You can't play basketball in silence. Make sure you're out there talking to your teammates. Yeah, get along. I mean, it's just so much basic stuff, man, that it's just amazing that the game is a little sick right now, man, and it needs a healing within in terms of the player personnel, the coaching staff, the GMs. They're getting money. Everybody in the NBA is getting money, but I'm concerned about what I'm talking about. I got a certain love for this game, and I'm concerned that You're not really giving me much to rave about right now.
Me too. I'm in love with the game as well. And like I said, it bothers me because of the style of play of at least one individual on this Pistons team. At least just talking about this game alone and watching Derrick Rose and having over – he's shooting over 50% from the field. Like over 50% from the field, and even though he's 2 for 3 for 3, but like, come on, he's giving you what he can off of the bench. If this is what you get rid of him, send him somewhere where he can be successful. Don't let him look like this. Like, come on, like this is how Derrick Rose's career is going to end up, on a bad season or two. Whether he was in Minnesota with the Wolves or here with the Pistons, like this is, and he still has gas in the tank. Like, dudes cannot beat him. They can't beat him. Like who's locking Derrick Rose up? Nobody. And you're watching him go manic on these teams and losing at home. You guys are even feeding off of the crowd. Like, I don't get it. Like, I'm baffled. It's like I said, nobody's playing defense and while he's doing this at this time, but let alone the Pistons as a whole aren't playing defense and letting the Bulls being their rival for years. And this is something that I watched since the Isaiah Mike days. This is a rivalry, and still the Pistons didn't need to take this seriously because they damn near lost by 10 at home. And they both have the identical records, being 14-26. But the Bulls pulled this off 108-99. Okay, the game that I started at the top of the show talking about that I'm frustrated with, I got to talk. I got to tell them how I feel. I'm a little angry at this one, but the Lakers come into OKC and win this game 125-110, in which Kyle Kuzma damn near puts up 40 points in this game up against the Thunder. And this is without LeBron. LeBron, they said, is facing flu-like symptoms. He was out. We already know Anthony Davis is out with the fall that he took a few nights ago. And the Thunder did get good play out of Shea and Gallinari. They both went off for 24, excuse me, in this matchup. But they ended up falling short. They lost by 15. But this score is not how this game looked. This was out of hand early. The Lakers ended up coming out the gate putting up 41 points. And keeping the average around 30 points until the fourth quarter, where the Thunder finally, you know, tried to come and play ball and play defense at that. But I don't know if Kyle Kuzma is trying to stay now because he was part of trade talk out of L.A. and he stepped up big. I don't think the Lakers want to move him if he's playing this type of basketball and shot well from three as well. Royce, your thoughts on this game as the Lakers win in OKC?
Well, man, big game by Kyle Kuzma, but not only that, Rajon Rondo is showing that he is definitely the backup point guard to LeBron James. They don't need Darren Collison when they were talking about Darren Collison wants to come back, and maybe there was some kind of tug of war for him between the Lakers and the Clippers. For what? Moving right along. I mean, Rondo is 21-12-8. So, look, he's definitely worked on his game. Rondo even taking 6 3-point attempts is growth. I'm not mad at him being 1 for 6. Ben Simmons was 1 for 6 from 3-point range in any given game. But I digress. Back to the Lakers. Handle their business, right? You know, Dwight Howard doing typical Dwight Howard things, walking double-double, a couple of blocks. I don't know what happened to the Thunder. You know, really, they have been on the roll. Maybe this was just one of, like you said, blowout Saturday, man. I'm chucking it up to blowout Saturday, and this looked like a couple Saturdays in a row. I felt like it was a blowout Saturday last week when we came into the kitchen and did the brunch. Last time we were together here. But outstanding performances from Gallinari and Shea. This is what they do. They're required to lead the team in scoring, you know, as a combo. Chris Paul, you know, 16-8. Not bad numbers. Man, you hit it. They got knocked out the box quickly. That first half, it was over, man. It was like, where's the fight? What's going wrong? Is there trouble? You know, was it a business decision? Like, hey, we're going to look at if we take some L's as a team, talking about the Thunder, and try to get some trades going so they can set their future. I don't know. But, again, man, this stuff was just hard to watch, bro. That's difficult games, man. Congratulations to the Lakers. They're doing Laker things. Even the Thunder, look, 22-17. If you had asked me, I think at any point, literally any point in the 2019-2020 campaign with the Oklahoma City Thunder be 22-17, I would have told you, hell no. Flat out. Hell no. Hell no.
Right.
Why would you be 22-17? That's not where this team is built to go. What's the purpose in being 22-17? You're not going to the NBA Finals. You're not winning a chip. You're really not that good. But this goes back to the points that I was making early. There are some bad basketball teams, poorly constructed by someone who has the privilege to wear the title NBA GM and cash those checks, and they putting together some park ball rosters like, yo, give me homie over there by the gate. Yo, let me get him right there. Yeah, you, with the glasses on and the high socks. You, come on. Let me get the throwback kid with the Air Force Ones on. What? Who are we drafting? Who are we putting on these teams? Why aren't teams playing their talented first and second year guys the necessary amount of minutes so they could develop and become something to talk about in the league? So we're going to get to one of those teams, Thomas. I got bones to pick.
Oh, I'll be there shortly. I'll be there shortly. Don't worry. The one thing that I'm looking at with this Thunder team, especially this game, right, and it's crazy that it goes this way. They are red hot right now. And I know, like me, I have to be real with myself. Like, I would love to see the Thunder get a championship while Russ just left and everybody said it, all eyes are against the Thunder and they got 20,000 picks from the Clippers and the Rockets, so on and so forth. Like, I would love for it to happen, but I know it can't. But at least I got to have, you know, faith and hoping that thing pan out. But they're red hot. They, out of the last 10 or so games, I think they're like 7-3 or something like that. And then they come home. Like, they've been on the road against a team that's hobbled. Like, without LeBron, without Anthony Davis, like, you guys have a shot. And you guys got blown off the board. You're not playing defense, nothing like that. And it's like, you don't know where to pull this from. But at least one player, and I know Chris Paul tried to defend him the other day, but if you are a shooting guard, and I'm talking more or less to you, Billy Donovan, and also when Scott Brooks was there, why can't you get a shooting guard that's playing that role of a shooting guard? Like not just have him there just for defensive purposes. This is the same situation that Scott Brooks did with Thabo Sefolosha, and I think this was more of an inviting situation to get James Harden out of there. James Harden was the sixth man, and sitting behind Thabo Sefolosha, who was playing defense, and they had him for only two defensive purposes, one to defend Kobe Bryant, the other was to defend Tony Parker. Other than that, Thabo was still giving you more than, I want to say, less than 6 points a game, and I want to be fair with that number. This continues to go on with this, I can't really say the Sonics because they had Hershey Hawkins back then, but more or less with the Thunder organization with Thabo Sefolosha, now you transition to Andre Roberson, who can't get healthy, and now you got Ferguson up here, and he's put up 0 points. Like, his average has to be below 5 points. And I understand, just like Chris Paul said, for defensive purposes, he's the trigger man. He has to at least, I want to be fair with the number, at least give me 8 to 12 if you are the guy shooting the ball, and you got Chris Paul bringing you platters and dishes and dimes. Like, I don't know what else you want. Like you can't score, and you're wide open on a lot of your attempts. Like, I don't get it. Something has to give. Please put this together differently. Please. I'll sound like an angry fan if I want to. I don't want to spend too much time with them. That's why I don't like talking about my boys. But I have to start doing that. I can't stay away from these guys too much longer. Any of my team, any of them. I don't care who it is. Okay. The next matchup I have, the Philadelphia 76ers, they took their talents to the state of Texas up against the Dallas Mavericks, in which the Dallas Mavericks have had an interesting run in the past couple of games. But the Mavericks get their swagger back. They winning this game 109-91, another 200-point game in which Luka didn't have the best scoring game, but he was two assists away from a triple-double. Two rebounds. I apologize. Two rebounds away from a triple-double. Ben Simmons was five rebounds away from a triple-double as well. But they win this one, flying away, damn near a 20-point win. What's your thoughts on this game? And with direction the Sixers are in, they play well at home, but on the road, they are interestingly enough under 500 playing on the road.
Yeah, you can't win an NBA title with the inability to get wins on the road. You're going to be required to win usually at least one game on the road in almost every series, you know, historically in the NBA, unless you're playing, I think it was one of those years the Lakers practically won. Well, yeah, the Lakers, was that 2001 when they beat the 76ers? They won every game except that first game in L.A. where Allen Iverson was so historic and iconic, stepping over Ty Lue. I remember the 83 Philadelphia 76ers did the 4-5-4. So, you know, hey, man, it's not easy to win every single game in the postseason. And this Sixers team is flailing a little right now. Without Joel Embiid, they were the number one team, you know, statistically in offense, you know, with post-ups, because Joel Embiid would post up so much. Trying to, you know, pivot now to Horford, who's more perimeter-oriented, is definitely passer-friendly, but he's not Embiid, but still an all-star in his own right, former NBA all-star. Ben Simmons, look, 0 for everything from 3, not even an attempt, 5 of 11 from the field. So if you were worried about your 50% field goal percentage, you shot 45.5 to be exact, 46% from the field. And look, this team lacks a reliable player off the bench. That's the real issue in Philadelphia. There's no six man, let alone anything with 7 and 8. It's not a very deep team. So if the starters aren't hitting, it's going to be a problem. I don't know if they're going to go on a long slide, but here's a talented Dallas team minus Kristaps Porzingis, timeless, and Philly just allowed, you know, Dwight Powell to look like a all-star, 19 and 12, catching lob dunks all on people's head. Luka, like you said, doing Luka things. This is one of his, I guess you could say, a little bit more of a quiet game. Defensively, they rattled him. They bothered him. I mean, they forced him to shoot 4 of 15. That's only like 27% from the field. But, you know, he definitely benefits from the whistle in his second year in the league. Got up 12 free throws. He was 10 of 12. It's a young team that's gelling, that's coming together. And if this Dallas Maverick team can get healthy, I think they stand a good chance to being a tough out in the first round. Look, if they finish at number 6, for example, the current standings out west, and they take on a Denver Nugget team that's just proven to be a little inconsistent with its rotations, and I won't go too far because I know they got to be up next. But this Dallas team is capable of knocking somebody off in the first round if they're shaky-bakey and Dallas happens to be hitting their stride and they're running right. They could run right over a Denver Nugget team.
Interesting, because where they are right now, they are sitting at 6, and the way that the West is going right now, I don't know. Okay, I'll be fair. How do I say it? Actually, all the seeds are not safe. We probably set number one right now. I think the Lakers probably will hang on to the number one seed because the way that they are playing ball out the gate, it'll be hard to watch them go on a losing streak and get tossed up. But I say 2 through – 2 through like 11, like everybody can make something happen. Nobody is out of the woods by any means in the West. So I don't think that it'll just be all pegged up for Dallas and Denver to go at it. It would be a very interesting run or series if these two did go at each other. Like you said, Kristaps wasn't on the floor, but Joel Embiid wasn't on the floor. So you got two notable stars or superstars, however you want to look at it, not on the floor. So just like I preached, the next man up.
I don't mean to cut you off, but don't forget we just got a chance to almost get a sneak peek of that the other night on ESPN. I believe it was Dallas versus Denver, and they were kind of trying to stir up that conversation, Luka versus Joker. Remember that? That was this week.
Right. No, definitely. No, definitely. I'm not hiding away from that by any means. I'm just saying that it depends on how these situations, if Dallas goes up or they go down, or Denver goes up or goes down, like, everybody's playing good ball in the Western Conference. Like, every night is get your popcorn ready. You don't know what's going to happen. And this is in the early portion of the season. We haven't even hit the All-Star break, and a lot of these games do have interesting appeal to them. You know, even though we are talking about blowouts, and everybody's getting blown out from every game that I mentioned other than the Pistons and the Bulls game, which was a 9-point game. But other than that, everybody's been getting blown out. But just like I said, Kristaps is off the floor, Embiid is off the floor. Somebody else has to step up and play ball. And for Dallas, finally, Dwight Powell, a.k.a. Cuzzo, you finally got to play ball. You get some love in the kitchen and doing it with the likes of being a high scorer alongside of Doncic, because it's like Luka is the guy every night for the team. And I was like, somebody has to step up because Luka's going to run out of gas by the time April comes. And he may be conditioned to play ball after the month of April and getting to the postseason, but you don't want him running rampant and then trying to go up against the likes of any team in the Western Conference and thinking that he's going to knock them off. It's going to be tough, and not saying that it can't be done, but it'll be an uphill battle for a youngster like him, and this will be his first run in the postseason if they are able to hang on to this. But, again, the Mavericks take care of business up against the Sixers 109-91, and something that Royce hit on, and I don't care. I'm not going to say I'm tired of it because I'm going to keep stressing it, and I hope it gets to you. I hope it gets to Philadelphia. Ben Simmons, shoot the damn ball. I'm sorry, Sports City, if you're taking damn as a curse word, I'm going to say it. Shoot the damn ball. Just like Roy said earlier, if Rondo can shoot the three ball 6 times and knowing Rondo's scared to shoot and he went 1-for-6, at least he tried. At least he tried to, you know, come through with something he may have felt far short. But guess what? They won convincingly. You're not even pulling the defense away from you. Like, I mean, pulling the defense to you. They're going away from you. They're all loading up in the paint to go box out and rebound because they know that you don't want to do nothing but other than try to get in the lane or distribute. Like, no, you have to shoot the ball, man. At least do your team a favor. But I'm not going to stop stressing that until you start to prove me wrong and somebody at the Liberty Bell hear me out there. They have to. Okay. The next game that I'm going to get into is something that Royce hit on. And this is crazy that it went down, but we were just talking about it this week on the crazy stuff going on in Ohio. But the Cleveland Cavaliers go into Denver up against the Nuggets and win this game 111-103, another 200-point game. It wasn't a blowout, within 10 points. So this is a cool game. In which, I don't know what's going on with Tristan Thompson. I think he took that dunk on pretty seriously when people were saying rest in peace, because I thought it was over for him after he got dunked on like that. But especially the way things were going on in Cleveland. But they have put together a couple interesting games. And Tristan had a 35-point effort the other day. He ends up with 18-13, a double-double. I don't know if the Cavs are trying to find their swagger. I doubt it, but they got an interesting amount of games they put together. Sexton went off with 25 as well in this game. Kevin Love had 19-15, him with a double-double also. And this is in Denver up against a quality team in the West. Just like I said, the Nuggets can finish anywhere from 2-8. I don't think they'll fall out. If the Nuggets fall out of the playoff window, yeah, then I'm on Royce's side. I'm picking on Malone. I'll be outside of that building screaming for your job, too. Oh, Michael Porter, 3 minutes of play in the game. Not to pump Royce up at all, but I know I'm setting the table up. I got to. I'm in the punch. I got to put a dish in front of him. I got to. But, Royce, your thoughts on this game, the Cavaliers going into Denver and knocking the Nuggets off at home?
Embarrassment. Flat-out embarrassment. You supposed to be the number 2 seed? Is that what we talking about, number 3 seed? Depends on the day of the week. The Denver Nuggets, this is the head coach that the organization chose to give, what, a 4-year, 5-year extension, right? Because he hit them with a few seasons of fool's gold where he improved on the Denver Nuggets win total. It appears the worst thing that ever happened to the Denver Nugget organization was to get past the first round last season. Because now they look like, hey, we good. We can take nights off. We can play an Eastern Conference team on the road. We can get smacked in the mouth by the Washington Wizards without Bradley Beal. And we can see a historic, basically 90, 92 points scored by the bench mob, a no-name bench mob. Really? That's who you are? Okay. Then you're going to allow the Cleveland Cavaliers, a team that seems to be in a little bit of turmoil this week. Kobe Altman, Kevin Love, fussing. Yeah, I want to be traded. Tristan Thompson, like, yo, is he a leader or is he not? Does he want to be traded? Where is that going? Kevin Love and Sexton, you know, who's passing the ball and who ain't. B-line, you guys finally decided not to play like thugs. Well, let me tell you, the Cavaliers thugged it out in the front court last night and flat out outperformed the front court of the Denver Nuggets, a team that's supposed to be a contender. Attention, All Sports City subscribers and first-time listeners, the Denver Nuggets are pretenders. They are not contenders. Get it out of your head. This is not a contending team with this type of, you know, head coaching. And what I mean by head coach, I'm just talking about right now, rotation. The guy doesn't have an idea who his rotation is, and we're not going to blame it on fantasy and gambling and betting and things of that nature. Be in charge of what you're in charge of. You get paid to head coach, not to worry about nobody's stats, not to jerk the lineup around. I know the Nuggets play again today, but I'm supposed to believe that the reason you held Michael Porter to only 3 minutes and beat him up, like nobody's a better defender on Michael Porter than head coach Mike Malone. Nobody.
Wow.
He got him on lock. You know?
Wow.
He got him locked up, locked down. And so it's 3 minutes. So I'm supposed to believe that it was three on Saturday because you're going to save him so he can play 33 on Sunday. Prove it. I dare you. Prove it. Let me see Michael Porter get free to the tune of 30-plus minutes today, January 12, 2020. Ah, man, please. Look, Yeti Osman, Kevin Love, and Tristan Thompson all going for man-sized double-doubles? Really? 50%, 60%, 40% from the field? The guards. Sexton and Garland shooting 50% from the field. Man, Jamal Murray, Gary
wow.
Harris is supposed to be a defensive stopper, man. Look, it was like Olay to the basket. Floaters, three-pointers. Damn, I thought LeBron was back in Cleveland, right? I was getting ready like, man, it's going to be the Cavs and the Warriors again in the finals? This is a travesty. This is a travesty. There's no reason a team as young to a certain extent in terms of the development of its backcourt should go into Denver of all places. Mile High Stadium, altitude, significant historic home court advantage. I say again, a significant historic home court advantage. The Cavaliers, they're 12-27. They're coming in basically sitting at 11-27. They should have walked out 11-28. But no, I guess Christmas came early. The Nuggets is giving away games. It don't matter. It's just January. We don't got to have a rotation. And then Mike Malone, man, this guy is so irritating. Sometimes he gets on and every loss, he always got something to say. He's always got a reason. He can pinpoint what's wrong. He's telling me the team didn't play well and everybody sucked basically with the exception of Jeremy Grant. But it was a point in the game where he said he didn't put Grant back in. He didn't do anything wrong, but he was just trying to find something that worked. Ain't that the dumbest SHIT ever? He didn't do nothing wrong. He obviously, based on your confession, you said he was playing well, but you didn't put him back in because you was trying to find something that worked. Well, was it working when he was in there or not? I'm not confused. You just don't make no damn sense to people who are really listening. This is a joke, man. And I'm going to continue to say it every time they do some stupid stuff like this. I don't care that he got an extension. He's got to be fired. Get your rotations right. Whoever the GM is currently right now, I don't know, but you're not doing your damn job. You need to get on the phone. You got to move some pieces. Coach got to make a decision. This does not work. This is not working. I don't care what the standings say. You're not supposed to lose to the Wizards, to the Cavaliers, I can't even recall if they lost to the Hawks. I want to say that they beat the brakes off the Hawks, but come on, man. I'm not impressed. That's a game you're supposed to win, just like this game.
I'm going to say this. I got two quick things to say about this game, and I'm going to get rolling. One, on a funny note, rest in peace shout out to Della Vadova. If you don't know what I mean, go to YouTube. Gary Harris caught a complete body. Really bad. Like, really bad. Like, bad. This was almost to the capacity of Jordan baseline on Ewing. Like the way that he dunked on Della Vadova, oh, my goodness. People, y'all, don't stay down there if y'all can't handle it, man. This is just what Tristan Thompson ran into. And this is the same thing that Della Vadova did, but Della Vadova jumped. He jumped, and it looked bad. So that's one. Two, in reference to helping Royce on this situation, the Nuggets, as a complete team, had 42 rebounds, and this is at home. Kevin Love, Seti Osman, and Tristan Thompson combined for 40 rebounds. Three players damn near out-rebounded the entire team, and this Nuggets team is a rebounding team. It's not like they don't get to the glass. Like, they get to the glass, and they almost outdid the team by themselves. This is actually helping Royce a little bit. And for you to limit a guy like Michael Porter Jr., are you telling everybody that he's trading a trading tool? Like, you guys are trying to get rid of him because you're logjammed basically at the forward position? This is almost how the Knicks look, but you are playing better basketball than the New York Knicks with the logjam of forwards that you guys have here. So I am going to get away from that, but I understand which way Royce is going. I don't know. Royce is cooking you guys on you guys getting rid of Malone. That may be a dish that you got to visit. That may be a dish that you have to visit. Okay, and the last game in the NBA, the Bucks go on the road up against the Timberwolves and win this game 122-101. The Blazers, the Bucks beat the Blazers 122-101. The Blazers are now 8 games under 500. They are 8-10 at home, and I know that they aren't healthy. They are waiting for pieces to get back, but they may continue to fall and fall out of contention to at least be playoff bound, especially with the pieces that they have there, especially with the revitalization of having Carmelo there. This has not been put together well. I don't know whether to look at stock. I don't know whether to look at the pieces within this roster on them not getting it, but this is the Bucks, and the Bucks are playing well everywhere, let alone on the road. They're 17-4. They're virtually unbeatable at this point. But again, this is regular season basketball. I want to see how they do pan out in the postseason, and I'm not putting that hate look at them. It may sound like I am, but I'm not. I just want to see how the Bucks look outside of what they're doing in the regular season, because they are damaging teams with the tune of the Lakers. Like, they've beaten teams. So it's not like I'm saying that they're just beating up on teams that haven't put this together. But, Royce, your thoughts on the Bucks beating the Blazers? Your thoughts on the Blazers? Giannis goes off of 30-10 again, 32 points and 17 rebounds, 6 assists. Damn, they had a triple-double in this game as well. I mean, is the Greek Freak on to a back-to-back MVP run as well?
Well, all is possible, what you just said there, as it pertains to this Milwaukee Bucks team. This is, I think, what we're going to see as they are constructed, the identity. And, again, I have to factor in just the talent across the board throughout the league. One thing about the Milwaukee Bucks organization, they know that they're a small market. They know that they're really just one superstar on the roster. They found a way to, you know, to get Chris Middleton opportunities on the All-Star team because, you know, look, the team is winning 50-plus games. Bud is doing an outstanding job coaching, but it's not hard to go out here, play together, make shots, defend together, and just do it as a complete cohesive unit. And I'm talking front office, coaching staff, player personnel. That's what you see when you see the Milwaukee Bucks product. Everyone seems to be on the same page. They're 20-3 in conference, 10-0 in division play, 18-2 at home, 17-4 on the road, 8-2 in their last 10 games. it's nothing to say. Like, this is the Milwaukee Bucks. Get used to seeing this in the regular season. I judge the Milwaukee Bucks on do they have the kind of talent in depth to win an NBA championship. I still think they do not. I strongly still consider the Milwaukee Bucks very much a pretending team. They're great. Their regular season, if there was a championship title to be given out for the regular season and your record in conference, they would be working on back-to-back championships for regular season play in the Eastern Conference. But beating up on the Portland Trail Blazers, that's who I really want to talk about. Shout out to the Milwaukee Bucks for what they're doing. They're supposed to do this. This is exactly what I was saying about a team like Denver. If you're supposed to be a world beater, then beat the world. So, hey, man, I'm not mad for Milwaukee doing what they're supposed to do. Keep doing what you do and punish everybody and find a way to get that done in postseason play. But this Portland Trail Blazers team, Thomas, is in trouble, okay? It's time for me to just, you know, let it call it for what it has now truly become. Whether it's injuries or not, this team is flat. 9-16 in conference, 3-5 in the division, 8-10 at home, 8-14 on the road. Two wins, 8 losses in your last 10 games, and you're on a two-game losing streak. There are problems in Portland, and I wish y'all could see me right now because I'm literally scratching my head trying to figure out what to present as the cause, right? What's the real problem? What's the issue? And what is the solution, more importantly, for this Portland Trailblazer team? It wasn't just get a healthy body and somebody else who's capable of scoring the ball from the perimeter, like obtaining Carmelo Anthony. Nurk obviously is not ready to go for games like this when Hassan Whiteside is out, you know, due to, I think he had like a cold or something like that. And he's playing great. I mean, there's not much more Hassan Whiteside could do. He's playing great. But there's not a lot coming off the bench. Anthony Simons is, you know, look, he's just a second-year player. I think he's having good games. He doesn't bring much to the table outside of scoring. I don't know if that's because Dame Lillard, in my opinion, chooses to be very, very ball dominant. At the same time, it's not like Lillard is consistently giving us 9, 10, 11, 12 assists per game. It's not like he's, you know, is doing his best to be like a LeBron or a Luka Doncic and flirt with triple doubles. That being said, they have to have a meeting. It's time for a team meeting. You know, minus the coaches, it's time for a team meeting. Guys have got to step up. Anthony Tolliver was nothing in the paint. There was no resistance there for Giannis and his dominance in the painted area. Scal, BCR, like guys that have to play the five in the absence of a Hassan Whiteside and Nurk. Hey, man, put a body on somebody. Bang somebody. You got 12 fouls between the two of you, got to use them up. Carmelo Anthony is not a five, period. You can't even go small ball five with Melo. It's just not who he is. So there's definitely problems in Portland, and it doesn't look like they're going to right that shit anytime soon. Timeless. It's disappointing to see.
I'm going to say this. I feel bad that I'm going to say this, though. And, Royce, you know I'm a big fan of at least CJ. And I'm a fan of all of them, even though Carmelo has fallen in the last 5 or 6 years. So I think that's interesting enough for me saying this. But they're going to have to get rid of this. Like, they have to break this up somehow. Somebody's going to have to go or two people are going to have to go. And I don't feel it's fair because they're not at the full unit that they need because they're still without Collins. They're still without Nurkic as well. Nurkic is out also. And Whiteside didn't play either, so they had to play without their big also. But for them to be losing at this capacity Stotts was, you know, coach of the year, you know, contention, things of that nature. Like, and knowing what he was able to do a season ago does not look like what it is right now. And I look at the way that the shots were distributed, and looking, it looks like Dame is like taking a, I don't want to say taking a back seat, but settling by trying to move the ball and get other people involved, and knowing that CJ's shot total is just as much as his, and Carmelo's shot total is close enough as well, and these guys are not getting the output that they want. They're actually falling behind in these matchups and losing at home at this type of clip. They're under 500 at home, in a game where you guys are supposed to be up, and let alone you have two players, even though they're both all-stars, Giannis is a superstar, but Chris Middleton went off for 30 points as well, too. Like, they both were comfortable. Bledsoe went off for 29. Between the three players, they scored 90 points in your arena. Like, they basically single-handedly beat y'all. The three of them put up, what, 91? And you guys put up 101? They basically say, yo, you know what? The rest of y'all can take the night off. And it really looks like that, looking across the board at this box score. So, I don't know what it's going to take. I guess I could more or less assess this better when everybody gets back, and if they can put a string of wins together to get back into the hunt in the Western Conference. But they're close to that halfway mark of being under 500 for the year. Like, if they have 18 more losses on the season, that'll be their 42nd loss, and that'll be the halfway point. And I know anybody that's 42 and 42 will have a hard time making the postseason, especially in the Western Conference. Okay. That's all I have for the NBA from Saturday. Now, the games begin. First and foremost, shout out to the efforts. And I can't even get mad because, like I said at the top of the show, my mama is a diehard Vikings fan. So shout out to the Minnesota Vikings because they played an excellent season this year. Can't take too much away from what they've done. Diggs has been an excellent receiver on the outside, even though he had a lot of disgruntled situations during the season and wasn't getting the ball. They had to deal with injury with Thielen. And Dalvin Cook, to me, is the running back I feel should be one of the MVPs. But a lot of people still scream Christian McCaffrey. It's debatable. I love every last bit of that. But Kirk Cousins and the season that he's had, he finally got a primetime win and told everybody in the locker room, you like that with the win that they had last week. They go into San Francisco and they face the primetime defense that was ready for them. And the San Francisco 49ers win this game 27-10, in which it was interesting at first because they kind of went shot for shot. You know, the Niners scored first, and then Diggs comes up with a 41-yard touchdown, and it's 7-7, and you're thinking, okay, which way is this game going to go? And then next thing you know, it's like, I don't know whether it was Bosa that got pumped up and talked to these guys, or Sherman, you know, being a veteran and saying, like, let's do our thing. But they did what they needed to do and held them scoreless after halftime, and they went into the half 14-10 at that, and the Niners basically cruised in this game, winning this game 27-10, and I have to tip my hat to what Garoppolo was able to do. He was safe, even though he ended up throwing one pick. That pick was a very questionable pick. Tevin Coleman came up with 105 yards rushing, doing this by committee. They did shut down Dalvin Cook, holding him to 18 yards rushing in this game as well. Royce, your thoughts on the game? Tell me how you felt about this matchup between the Vikings going into Santa Clara, even though it's the San Francisco 49ers.
Yeah, I wasn't surprised by the outcome, Timeless, but I was committed, you know, since, you know, joining the Brunch staff these recent few weeks. I've been consistent in rolling with the Vikings, and I said I was going to ride with the Vikings until – they were no longer there riding. And, look, they just ran into a team that was playing better football, hitting on all cylinders. As you mentioned, look, it looked like it was going to be interesting, you know, second half. But even in that first half, flow-wise, it just seemed as if San Francisco was fresher in my eyes. And, you know, Minnesota was still looking for something that might be able to solve the puzzle later on in the second half. And, look, it just exploded in the direction of the 49ers. The better team, the better record, it definitely showed in play and performance on the field. And if you can't get your workhorse back off, in terms of Dalvin Cook. It was definitely going to be a long day. I didn't think Kirk Cousins had more than one miracle in him in terms of performances under the bright lights. But, you know, what he did last week, look, you got to salute him. He was able to, you know, shed that label for a week and move this team, this franchise, in the right direction as the quarterback under center. So, salute to the Vikings and what they were able to accomplish, man. But it's all about what San Francisco did, like you said. I mean, they dominated in the running game, and that's how you win postseason football, man. You know, you eat up clock. You eat up yards, you hold on to the possessions, and you force the other team, you know, to try to throw the ball. And even though it appears that Minnesota, you know, bested them by 4 passing yards, points, right? It still comes down to who scores the most points, and they didn't score enough points. It was all about San Francisco, so.
And this is the crazy part, because I wonder what the Vikings were doing or thinking. But you have a guy in Dalvin Cook that's getting things going for your offense. And as a total team, you guys had 10 rushes. He had 9 carries. But 10 as a total team, he had 9 of the carries. Like, you have to keep him involved. But I know they were probably playing comeback football and trying to let Kirk Cousins be the hero. And knowing his history, shall I say, of him trying to, you know, play football in these meaningful games or primetime game, and it just didn't work out. Thielen probably was their leading receiver, 5 catches for 50 yards, even though Diggs had 57 yards receiving. One of his catches was that touchdown catch in the first quarter, which went for 41 yards. He only ended up with a 16-yard catch after that, and that was it. He had 5 targets on the game. I just wonder where everything was going consistently for this team. Kyle Rudolph had 3 targets as well, ended up with 2 catches for 4 yards, and not too much production they had in the passing game for Minnesota. So this is one thing I'm looking at. I do have to give the Niners their respect and their credit defensively. They carried out their efforts all season long, and they continued going into the postseason right here as well. We do have a caller in queue calling out of 480. Welcome to the brunch. How are you feeling this morning or afternoon here?
I'm doing pretty good, doing pretty good.
Okay, so your thoughts on the game, how you feel everything went down in San Francisco, Santa Clara, actually?
I think you guys kind of hit it on the head. I think you especially, Ty, the way that you said Dalvin Cook is the way that this team goes. I think there's a few teams like that this year that we saw that they're running back. You know, in a quarterback-driven league, their team went the way their running back went, you know, similar to the one across, you know, in their division with Green Bay, the same way Aaron Jones goes. And last week, I think we could see it wasn't as if Dalvin Cook came back healthy and put up a tremendous performance. I think it was still 3.4 yards a carry, under 100 yards. Now, he did get to 2 touchdowns. But I predicate most of what happened last week and how well we saw or how close it was early in this game was the defense. That defense came out to play and they came out strong, forcing a fumble, forcing an interception against the Niners team that had a week off in preparation offensively. And we could see defensively having that week off what it did for them. They came out balling and also came out healthy. I think with the addition of Quan Alexander, even though he didn't play a lot, but with also D Ford coming back and just the strength of that front seven, you saw it on display. Healthy, a week off of preparation. Now again, if they can do that offensively, they might be scary in the NFC Championship game. But man, this game in general just went to see how well. If Dalvin Cook is going, that offense can go. It has nothing to do with Kirk Cousins playing well in big games or not. If he's got a good running game and if Dalvin Cook is clicking, they are hard to stop. He gets on rhythm. I think that's what you see. I think that's what you miss, and I think we see that all the time. You know, we wonder what happens. Why isn't he not clicking with Thielen? Why is he not clicking with Diggs? Cook comes back, they play well, and then everything, you know, they go on the eight-game run there or something like that, 8 or 9 games, where they just played outstanding offensively. Dalvin Cook was the engine starter. He gets hurt, and we saw what happened. If they stay healthy, they are a team to be reckoned with because they do have a defense that travels and travels well. Mike Zimmer, what he does with that defense year in and year out is just it's something special. It's something to watch. They shut down almost everyone. And then when it comes to playoff time, they do it again this year with New Orleans. So, just a bad game all around. But when you're facing the number one team and they got that week off, it just shows. And again, I think we've heard it all day on all the networks. They proved it, and they showed they were the number one team in the NFC, if not the NFL, by the next game we're going to talk about.
Okay. And I mean, just like you said, things have changed for Minnesota. Their culture is different. At least this season, or the past 2 or 3 seasons, I could say Minnesota has got to the playoffs and shown face, and they were the team that knocked off not only the Saints this year, but 2 years ago as well, knocked the same Saints off too. So the culture has changed there, but it's always something that lingers, whether it's quarterback play. I remember when Case Keenum couldn't get it together up against Philly, and the Eagles ended up going to the Super Bowl and winning that Super Bowl. That was a chance for the Vikings. And looking at the situation for Kirk Cousins, I don't feel like I'm being fair in saying this, but you have to show up more consistently in these games that mean a lot, let alone this is a one-and-done scenario. So I am going to put that to bed right now. Minnesota, I do have to give you guys credit on the way that you guys played ball this season, but it falls short, and this is a blowout, 27-10, and I don't know what the offensive, you know, plan out was, but for them to only have 10 carries and knowing Dalvin Cook is a speed demon and to put pressure on the defense, I don't think you guys stuck to the script. I think they definitely put the ball in Kirk Cousins' hands to try and be the superhero, especially while both of these guys didn't throw the ball well. Garoppolo had 131 yards passing, and Cousins had 172 yards passing. Like, this was more or less won by the running backs, and it clear cut. If Dalvin isn't going to be productive, then what are you going to do? Okay. So the next matchup I have, right? And I'm mad. I feel some type of way, Sports City. I wanted to see them go far, but we are in the
playoffs. Don't talk about playoffs. You kidding me? Playoffs? I just hope we can win a game.
I hope they can too, because people are feeling some type of way about this team, aka the Big Trust, or better known as the Baltimore Ravens. They get shut down at home by the Tennessee Titans, who are on an awakening storm on this road. They go into New England and stop the Patriots, a.k.a. the former champs, so there will be a new champ. And then going into Baltimore up against the top-ranked team in the NFL, which went 14-2 this year, losing one game at home this season, and they lose to Ryan Tannehill. It's like they know that I'm going to talk about this dude. That's why I'm pissed. And looking at Tannehill's stats, right, Tannehill had 88 yards passing. The rest of this was done on Derrick Henry. Here goes the crazy part, right? Tannehill had 88 yards passing, right? And I'm being brutal, but I don't want to be like brutal, but kind of. One of the person that led the team in receiving yards was Raymond. Raymond had a catch for 45 yards. So you mean, out of the other 6 completions, it was 43 yards passing for him. He finished the game with 88 yards passing. This was a Derrick Henry show in Baltimore, and the Ravens couldn't stop him. Lamar Jackson tried to do everything he could. He ended up throwing 2 interceptions. Hollywood Brown had a good day, 7 receptions for 126 yards. Lamar Jackson finished the game with 143 yards rushing and 365 yards passing. I feel bad, even though he had 59 attempts passing the ball. His guys are letting him down, and I don't want to put this on anybody, but he more or less put the shoulder load on him and saying that he made a lot of mistakes in the game, but these guys are dropping passes where he clearly was giving them easy targets. It wasn't like he was, you know, bulleting the pass or throwing it too hard for these guys, even though I shouldn't even be saying that, because these guys are NFL players and they're getting paid millions of dollars to make the catch. But he shouldered the load and said that, I made a lot of mistakes, put the game on me. So that's showing growth to a young player right here, and I know that it's a bittersweet situation, but this is, again, year number two while he's at the saddle, where they've fallen short in the postseason and not able to get a win, let alone they had clear-cut edge to home field across the board, and it's all for naught up against the Tennessee Titans. And I'm just trying to quickly look at everything, even though the turnovers were there to hurt Lamar in this matchup. But like I said, Derrick Henry finished with 195 yards. This dude is the workhorse probably of the league. And it seems like it's more – this is the dangerous part about Derrick Henry. The more the game goes on, the stronger he gets. And it's like he's not getting tired. He's not. And it's like dudes don't want to tackle him. Like as bad as it is, he's stronger than I. They don't want to tackle him. And he also threw a touchdown pass in the game as well. So I got to give him his credit to get things done. Royce, your thoughts on this game? The quote-unquote MVP, unless Russell jumps in here, like I got into an argument today and yesterday about they saying Christian McCaffrey, I'm like, get out of here. Dalvin Cook is another name that you could throw in here. Aaron Rodgers could be another name that you could throw in a hat. But your thoughts on the way that the Titans went into Baltimore and took this game from the league's best team?
Yeah, it was an outstanding performance by, you know, the Titans and Henry. But I kind of want to jump on Lamar Jackson, and I don't mean jump on him in a negative way. I felt like he was brilliant. You know, as I watched the highlight package from this game, the throws he made where there was a reception, you know, where the receiver caught the ball, I thought he was brilliant, man. I thought he made all the types of throws that quarterbacks need to be able to make, and he did it in a big game. On the stage, faced plenty of pressure in the pocket. He knew when to run. He knew when to maintain and stay in the pocket to make the throw. And it's unfortunate, as you alluded to early, and I'm glad you just skimmed across it. It gives me opportunity to kind of harp on it. You know, as a receiver, man, when your quarterback needs you to make the catch so that you can have momentum and get to the end zone, you know, he was let down. And I'm proud of him for being a great quarterback and putting it on his own shoulders and saying, hey, it's on me. But the reality was, hell no, it really wasn't. It's a team win. It's a team loss. Your teammates did not come through and catch the ball when they needed to. And then, as you know, when it comes to play calling and whatever you need to get the ball in the end zone, those times that they got in the red zone, man, and came away with field goals, they really need a touchdown. And that's championship-level football. And so I don't know if, you know, them having a bye had anything to do with it. Lamar Jackson just looked outstanding to me and what his efforts were. I mean, look, what did he throw for, 365? I mean, I get it. You got two picks, but – yeah, I just can't bring myself to blame him for why they lost. Now, is it the turnovers? Yes. Did they lose that game? Yeah. I mean, the ball dominance. Henry held on to the ball. Tannehill didn't throw a pick, and so they were mistake. There was mistake-free football being played by the Tennessee Titans. No fumbles. No interceptions. And, you know, they didn't even have to dominate in terms of clock because they were scoring the ball. I mean, they were getting in the end zone. I mean, the time of possession, the Baltimore Ravens had the ball longer. But you're not yielding results. I mean, field goals are just not enough against this Titan team that was just flat out rolling. Even when you look at the box score in terms of the rushing attempts and averages, Baltimore was playing their game. I thought they were trying to have that balanced attack, but the Titans right now are just – they're in another world in terms of playing football right now. It's not much you can say about what Derrick Henry has done. I'll leave that to somebody else to rave about. But he's praiseworthy. Don't get it twisted. I'm just sharing the conversation. He is flat-out praiseworthy for what he's done this postseason and what this Titans team has done defensively, because that's another area that's not gotten a lot of traction conversationally, in my opinion, because not only do you got to hang the most points on the board, but you got to try not to be in a shootout. And the only way you're not in a shootout is you got to, you know, force teams to go three and out and hold them, much like they did with the Ravens. Four times basically in the red zone, and all they give up is 12 points after their offense is dropping 28. Hey, man, shout out to the D and the coaching staff, son.
Definitely, and I'm going to do it. I don't care. I'm tired of hiding on this situation. But, yeah, he threw two picks, right? At least one of them. Was a clear pass right to Mark Andrews, and he didn't grab the ball. The ball went right to Byard. Byard got the pick and returned it for like a good 20 or 30 yards return, right? That's one of the picks. He threw a pick later in the game as well. But it was like Lamar Jackson tried to do everything that he could to at least do his share, right? Knowing that he had to try and pick up the pieces, knowing that they had a deficit going into the half, and knowing that the defense couldn't slow down that offense at all. And this was a Derrick Henry exhibition, if you will. He accounted for 508 yards total. This is the quarterback, like, let alone the 365 yards. He threw two picks, so I'm going to hold that against him. Two picks. He got sacked four times. He lost 20 yards, right, being sacked four times, right? But he still had 143 yards rushing. Like, damn, he was on his way to at least 150 yards rushing. Like, what else did you want him to do at the end of the game? Because me and my brother were together watching the games. My brother's like, do you see how hard Lamar Jackson is standing on that sideline breathing? Like, he was breathing like he know that he gave it his all. And I feel bad that, let alone he's this young, and this is going to be a bitter taste on the tip of his tongue until he gets back into the season next year. But everybody's going to hang the negative. Like, oh, well, you lost the first time you got to the playoffs last year. You guys were the best team in the league with a 14-2 record this year and lost at the doorstep, being at home against the Tennessee Titans team, who the quarterback didn't play worth a damn, but he ended up throwing two touchdown passes anyway. A lot of stuff is going to probably be hung negatively on Lamar Jackson, in which Mark Ingram didn't have a great day rushing the ball. He's 6 carries, 22 yards, and Gus the Bus, a.k.a. one of my guys, 3 carries for 20 yards as well. So back to the drawing board. I don't think it's too much that they need to do offensively. Just like Roy said, the playmakers, the guys that are making the catches, let him down, even though they did almost have 400 yards receiving or passing, however you look at it. But they needed to do more, especially dropping passes. And the big names had drops in this game, let alone his go-to guy was Mark Andrews. That was the one that had that. The drop, I don't even want to really drop, a mishandle that stayed up in the air too long for a pick. He was targeted 7 times, and Hayden Hurst, being another tight end that actually plays well for them, he was targeted 6 times with 4 catches apiece for both of those guys. And Sneed with dropping passes as well, too. All across the board, it wasn't going the way that, you know, we all remember Lamar having this type of season. So I don't feel fair me saying this, but they're going to have to go back to the drawing board and figure this out for next season. I don't think there's too much tweaking they need to do, but the defense is the one that I have in question, like they have to. And also Lamar, he also had a fumble involved in the game as well, and it was a lost fumble too. But 3 turnovers, I think that could do it for you. Questionable 4th down call that they came up short on as well. The Ravens, this was an awesome season. I'm not going to lie, I was entertained, but you guys did fall short, especially being at home in this matchup. Okay, so into the games of today. I want to get your perspective and thoughts on the matchups, and we'll move. We got 10 minutes, a little over 10 left. the first matchup we have is Houston going into Kansas City up against the Chiefs in Arrowhead. What's your thoughts on this game? Who do you like and why, and who goes off as well?
Wow. Jeez. I'm just going to roll with Kansas City, man. I just think they're the better team. I expect Mahomes to have a typical Mahomes kind of day. Hopefully, you know, Hill is going to make his appearance in the end zone multiple times. I think he's a tough cover for most defenses. But, you know, look, We know that J.J. Watt can wreak some havoc there on that line, and if he could be a disruption, anything could happen. It's going to come down to, you know, if we're following the script of previous games this postseason, it's going to come down to who can get a running game going and who can minimize their turnovers. And you got to get 7 points when you're in the red zone. You can't continue to walk away with just a field goal. So I'm going Kansas City, and I'm going with Patrick Mahomes to be the player of the game.
Okay, I agree with you. I'm going with the Chiefs, but I think this game may end up being tight, even though the line or the point spread between them is 10. They say Kansas City is favored by 10, so they're expecting a blowout, right? In which Travis Kelce means everything because he's questionable. And Travis Kelce is one of the better, if not the best tight end in the league. I put Kittle in that discussion. It's Kittle and Kelce right now to me. Gronk is out of the conversation because he's gone. So it's those two at this point in time. If Kelce doesn't play, I think it's going to be a tighter game. I think he could end up being a difference if he does play. If he doesn't play, it'll be a miss, and it'll be close if the Texans do win this game because Kelce wasn't on the field, and it puts a lot of pressure on that Texan secondary. I'm going to go with Hill. I'll go with Tyreek Hill to have a day. I don't think they have too many people to deal with him defensively. He'll actually pull a lot of those defenders with him and open up a lot of stuff underneath. And Mahomes, to me, is easy, even though I respect where Royce went. I respect it because it is a battle of two African-American quarterbacks. I love it, Mahomes and Deshaun Watson. Both of these guys are mobile. They got cannons and make things happen. But I'm going to go with the Chiefs. I'm going to go with Tyreek Hill to get this done as well. At home, it's tough to win in Arrowhead. Not to say that Houston can't do it. They can. It's not like the Chiefs haven't lost at home. They've lost at home 3 times this year. So it's a possibility. It's a possibility. But I'm going to stick with Kansas City. I'm going to go with what I know, especially with this line sitting at 10. I really want to see what they say about Kelce up until 3 o'clock, if he is able to give it a go or not. So I'm going to go Chiefs, and I'm going to go Hill. Okay. It's not fair for me to say this about this game because both of these games are get your popcorn ready. I don't care what nobody say, but I'll probably be eating something different than popcorn. I'll probably have steak or something. I don't know. We'll see how it pans out. But the next matchup we have is the one that we've all been dealing with, I want to say, for this past decade, right? Like, these guys have been playing each other in the postseason. You have the Seattle Seahawks going up against the Green Bay Packers, in which Green Bay is favored by 4, right? The Seahawks have gotten the better of the Packers in history, but this is a different Packer team with, I don't want to say they don't have the big name. I'll say it that way. They don't have the big name that we're used to, but they have players that's coming up to make plays for this Packers team. And that's why I said they're missing the likes of Aaron Rodgers of being one of the MVP, because he's getting it done with what he has right now. And, I am going to say this on air. Shout out, even though I don't like the Packers, but shout out to Aaron Jones, the running back. I know this guy personally, and I did not know him, and he hit me up to let me know. So it's cool. Aaron Jones, I respect you now that you made me aware of the situation, man, and he shouted me out too, and I'm happy about that. So shout out to Aaron Jones on the Packers, showing your boy some love. Now it's like I got to show a little love to the Packers. But I don't know, because I'm a big Russell Wilson fan. I don't know if Russ could go up here and cause upset up there in Wisconsin. I want to see how you feel about this, Royce. This is both of those games. I can't even say one of these games. Both of these games are get your popcorn ready, but this one right here, especially knowing the history of the Seahawks and the Packers and the last time that this went down, them being in Washington majority of the time, your thoughts on this game, Royce? Who do you like and why, and who goes off in this game as well?
Well, I'm rolling this week with the Seahawks. Because of Russell Wilson, I think he knows what he has, right? Like, he understands the limitations of the offense. And the fact that Russell Wilson has always been, you know, like a double-edged sword as a quarterback in terms of his ability to make the pass as well as, you know, run the football and just be, I don't know, man, he's like the ideal model of what you want to groom a quarterback if he's going to run and throw and be mobile, like, you really want him to do it the way Russell does it. He's a genius, man. I just love the way he orchestrates the offense, and he tends to do it most seasons of his career without a dominant wideout that you know, makes media headlines and just, you know, has all the advantages, speed, quickness, athleticism, leaping ability, and things like that. It's not really been a big-name receiver there in Seattle during his tenure. Having Marshawn Lynch back, even though, you know, people are every week like, man, this dude just recently got off the couch. We don't know what he's going to bring to the table. Well, that's not true. Everybody knows what Marshawn Lynch brings to the table. He brings toughness. He brings, you know, championship pedigree and respectability. He's durable, if nothing else, for the most part. And what I mean by durability, I really mean to say, like, you're going to feel him when he runs the ball, whether he breaks tackles or not, regardless of what he averages per carry. You know, this is a guy who is a winner, and when it's all on the line, he can be trusted. That being said, I'm curious to see what DK Metcalf can do this week. He had an outstanding debut last week. Statistically, I believe he set an NFL rookie playoff record with 160 yards receiving against the Eagles. So, you know, Russell kind of has, again, in my opinion, like, just real intimate knowledge of what's in the toolkit that he can work with and build something special. I know the Packers are the home team and they're the favorite, but I'm expecting another, I guess you could say, higher seeded team to get knocked off at home today. So give me the Seahawks and give me Wilson and Metcalf. Those are the guys I'll be watching.
Okay, we do have Nacho back in the building. Nacho, your thoughts on this game? I know that you are the resident Packer guy. Your thoughts on who you like? And wait, before you go, Royce, who is your guy that you think is going off for the Seahawks?
I actually took two. I took Metcalf and Russell Wilson. But
okay,
primarily Russ. I mean, like, you know, this team is going to go as Russell Wilson goes.
Okay, and Nacho, your thoughts on this game? Who do you like, and who goes off in this game also?
Oh, man, this is a scary one. I think the overemphasis of the fact that their offensive line is makeshift put together, for what it is, I think we are very good at getting to the quarterback. The problem with that is, Russell Wilson is very good at avoiding. So watching what he did last week, it's scary. So too much has been made of him not being able to win. I think he's 0-3 in Lambeau. Too much has been made of the cold. Too much has been made of a lot. This has all the makings of a letdown. Aaron Rodgers not playing like Aaron Rodgers, and doesn't look like, again, that I don't know if the switch can just be flipped like that. I don't say that for everyone else. I can't just say that for him. So I'm going to have to go against the grain, go against what, you know, I know I like and know what I want, know what I need as a fan of the Packers. But I think the Seattle Seahawks pull this one out, a very close one, heartbreaking again, probably last second field goal or something of that nature. Led by an amazing scramble by not the quarterback Aaron Rodgers. I just think Russell Wilson has just been doing it all year long, with anyone and everyone, people off the street, people from the couch. It doesn't matter who it is. And as for the Green Bay Packers, they've been playing, and what people like to say, winning ugly. I know it was because of the defense and the run game, but the inconsistencies on offense, whether it be being able to balance it out or pass when we need to, I think it's going to come to bite them. And against a defense that is not that great, but predicates itself on capitalizing on your mistakes, I don't expect a lot of turnovers of that nature, but incomplete passes on third down, not picking up first is something that could be an issue with this offense. So I'm going to go Seattle, and I think I'm going to couple on what Roy said on the two players, but I think it's DK Metcalf, and I think it's Lockett. As well as our corners and secondary is played, we are going to see as a defense what it's like for other defenses when they played Aaron Rodgers in his prime, how hard it's going to be to guard receivers with speed and just a continuity with their quarterback to know what that quarterback wants them to do and making the right play. So, you know, we'll be able to get to him in 3 to 4 seconds. He'll scramble and make a great play. It's just going to be all on Russell Wilson. But I think Lockett and Metcalf making big plays downfield will seal the deal. So I'm going to go Seahawks and those two guys. It's heartbreaking, but the defense has been bad on giving up big plays all year long. And these two guys are just too good at it. So, and again, the way that they're working with their quarterback, it's too good. So I have to go against it. It sucks, but first-year quarterback, our first-year head coach. Hopefully, he can he set the bar really high, but hopefully, we can get better.
Okay, so I got the two of y'all going Seattle, and I got the Packers, and here is why. All of the quarterbacks that I think that should probably get their second or third opportunity to win is gone. You got Drew Brees, that's out, that's fighting for his second one. You got Tom Brady, I was fighting to get his seventh to try and set history all across the board. He's out of here. You got Lamar, that was telling them they're going to get a Super Bowl out of him. Well, he's gone too. And now you got Minnesota and them trying to get to their first Super Bowl since the Marshall day and you know, when he ran the wrong way, things of that nature. And that didn't happen. You still have Aaron Rodgers with one Super Bowl with all of the accolades that he's done. Even though he's going up against Russell Wilson, which I love Russell Wilson. I can't even lie. Like, I love what Aaron Rodgers do, but I play him. Well, like, we go against him two times a year. I can't stand him. Like I don't like him because he's that good. So it's like, if he – listen, and this is, I'm putting this in the kitchen today. If Aaron Rodgers loses this game at home, there are questions that need to be addressed to number 12. Even though he is awesome, he's a bad dude, like people like to say, something has to give. And I know it's more or less the defense that they'll try to peg this to, but Aaron Rodgers is the guy that gets the ball every snap and one of the more feared quarterbacks in the league, i.e. going up against Russell Wilson, who has the same title on his back as well of being one of the more feared quarterbacks, because a play is not dead if you think those receivers are covered. He can buy time and get these guys open. So him being at home with the history that they have against, I'm going to even be even more spicier on the dish with him up against NFC West teams in the playoffs, being Aaron Rodgers, because he doesn't fare well up against San Francisco and he doesn't fare well up against Seattle in the postseason. I'm going to go with Aaron Jones since I know the guy now. I'm going with Aaron Jones to be the mismatch with those linebackers, even though Wagner and those guys do bring it. The former, well, they are still Legion of Boom, but it's not the same Legion of Boom. But I think he has that mismatch, and I think it gets exploited, and Rodgers will come up with some interesting plays and probably have the ball late in the fourth quarter. Even though Russell will have his magic, I think this will be one of these get-your-popcorn-ready type of games. It's going to be a 30-point type of effort, but I think the Packers get the ball last. And Crosby saves the day. So I'm going to go with Aaron Jones and the Packers to get this done. Okay, so we are at the end of the show. Awesome stuff. I need plus and closeouts from the both of you. Nacho, before we go, who do you like in that, the Chiefs, or the Texans and the Chiefs? Who is your pick for that game?
Oh, man, Will Fuller. That's the crazy stats. If I won't read them if you get a chance. If people with and without Fuller this year is just crazy. I'm going to go with the Chiefs player. I'll go with Tyreek Hill. McCole Hardman, a big return. That'll win the game. Sorry.
Okay, and I also need a plug and close out as we shut down the kitchen on this Sunday morning brunch.
Oh, yeah, just at Nacho in the Box on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram. Great show. Loved every bit of it. Go Pack Go, 13-3, divisional game. Let's do this.
He said, go Pack, go, and chose the Seahawks. Boy, I tell you, man, these people are crazy. I don't know if I put a jalapeno in the dish or something, but something is going on in this kitchen. Okay. Royce, give me a plug, close out, shout out, anything that you'd like to promote as we shut it down here at the brunch.
Oh, man, thanks once again for having me. Shout out to you and everybody, Nacho, the whole entire Sports City staff. Past, present, and future, we keep doing what we're doing, man. Let's keep it hot right here. All these dishes, love to eat. Food for thought.
The slogan, he took it and flipped it. I love it. My popcorn is ready. I'm going to actually go to the supermarket to figure out what I'm cooking up for real in this doggone kitchen for these two games because I feel like Bart Scott. Ooh, I can't wait. And Bart Scott, I heard what you said earlier this week. I agree with you. I agree with you. If you didn't hear what Bart Scott said, it's a personal one. He's talking about Detroit. I did not know Bart Scott was from Detroit. And he started talking about the losing history with Detroit and how Stafford is probably the biggest piece of the situation of the losing in Detroit and said that they need to get rid of him and send him to New England to do both of them a favor. Do Stafford a favor getting him to New England and getting Stafford out of Detroit and starting anew with a new quarterback because of his losing history. So I was like, wow, that would be big both sides of the spectrum. At least let him learn from Brady. But I don't think it'll get better by Stafford, especially with him sitting out this whole season. But that's neither here nor there. My popcorn is ready. I can't wait to see these games go down. Interesting run in the NBA, especially with the games that we hit on in these two games. And I know my mother's mad. Ma, I know you listening. Quincy got the better edge of you right now. And Lamar Jackson, I feel terrible for you, man, because you're going to have to – and I hope it don't get better than this next year. Like if he goes 15-1, 16-0, and they still have home field advantage and can't get it done. Like, there's a whole bunch of youth there. The tight ends are young. Marquise Brown is young. They should be able to get it done. I feel bad, though, man. But y'all already know what time it is, Sports City. On that note, tell a friend to tell a friend that it's the Chefs again. And if they don't know, now they know.